Worldwide, and you're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM.
You're listening to CKUT. The following is a previously broadcast program. Stay tuned.
Hello, and welcome back to CKUT 90.3. I am your host, Kat, of Girl Meets World, and I'm joined by my fellow host.
Hi, I'm Carla.
I'm going to call this edition our finals edition, because not only is this our final episode of the year, but we are also all going currently through finals, which is why our hosts, other hosts, Zoe and Adele, will not be with us today.
Yeah.
And we stand with them in solidarity.
It's hard.
It's rough out here. Carla was almost not going to make it. She had an exam too.
Yeah. All my exams are really close and all my due dates are really close. So I feel like I've had like five things due in the span of like 5 days. And I'm like, I can't take it anymore. I just want to be on a beach.
That's the only place I want to be. If I could do anything right now, it would be a direct flight ticket from Yule to Punta Cana. That would be my dream.
That would be a dream.
I'm going to leave it to Carla to introduce the song because I'm going to butcher it.
Yeah, so we're going to start off the show with Je te re...
Wow. I think I jinxed it.
We're going to start the show with Je reviens te chercher by Gilbert Bécaud, the Romain Drouet and Jean Flambert remix, playing now live.
Je reviens te chercher. Je savais que tu m'attendais. Je savais que l'on ne pourrait se passer l'un de l'autre longtemps. Je reviens te chercher. Tu vois, j'ai pas trop changé. Je vois que de ton côté, tu as bien traversé le temps.
And that was Je reviens te chercher by Gilbert Bécaud, Romain Drouet, and Jean Flambert remix. My brain is... I have spent all of my brain power on Canadian federalism, so right now it's...
She just finished an exam. We got to give her some credit.
Yeah, my brain is very, very empty. You are listening to Girls Meet World on 90.3 CKUT. Do you want me to introduce our first subject?
I would love that.
I want to preface this by saying I have been harassed on the internet for sharing my opinion about Taylor Swift. I feel like I have to say this. I like Taylor Swift's music. Okay.
Yeah.
I remember listening on TV back in 2009 when she released the music video for Mine. Mm-hmm. Okay. I have been through all the, maybe not all the eras. I've been through most of the eras. I like Taylor Swift's music. She's a very talented woman. She does deserve credit for a lot of the things that she does.
That being said,
I have a fundamental disagreement with the idea of Taylor Swift being person of the year.
Yeah. Yeah. So what we were kind of discussing before this is like, you know, in terms of who was the most iconic person of the year, you know, you can see who was the most influential, understood. But I think the problem with the person of the year is it's so ambiguous. You know, last year we're going to have Zelensky winning and then the next year it's Taylor Swift. I feel like that's such a wide jump that you're bound to have people who are not going to agree with this. Like it's, you can't go like the political route and then ultimately turn it to, I don't even know what this is.
I think they're like trying to say that like, oh, because there was the argument of like, she saved the U.S. economy with the Eras tour.
Oh, my God.
Which like, listen, I'm not denying the fact that women have spending power and buying power. Because, listen, I went to see the Barbie movie. If I had money, I probably would have gone to see either the Eras tour or Renaissance.
Mm-hmm.
That's not that I'm denying. It's just the fact that I feel like there are other things. I don't want to say that were more important because then again, you're diminishing the importance
exactly.
of a person. But there are other things that when I'm going to think 2023, I'm going to think that before I think the year of Taylor Swift.
I know. See, this, but that's my point. Like last year, we can't have something like, okay, if you want to think of what defines the year, you're going to go, okay, Russia-Ukraine war. And then you're going to go to 2023 and we're going to think Eras Tour. You know what I mean? It's such a wide like scope to pick from. And then in turn, like, you know, well, again, what we were saying off air is like, then one can make an arguable thing of like, if we're going to go the war route, then fair enough, we can dedicate it to maybe the people of Gaza. Like one could say that. And that seems like a very reasonable and, you know, uncontroversial, dedicate it to the city. And this is, again, what we were saying was, it's not like they have a problem with being wide in range. I mean, 2006, the person of the year was everybody.
Yeah. So, also, they have put controversial people as Time's person of the year. That's not an issue.
Exactly.
I'm pretty sure 1 year Hitler got it.
Trump got it 1 year.
Elon Musk got it 1 year. American soldiers got it. Vladimir Putin, he has it.
Really?
Yeah, people who you can argue are like not.
But see, that's what I mean. It's supposed to be just who
impact.
Like an impact. Exactly. It's not necessarily good or bad. And I think this one is like, I don't know. Maybe it's, I think, because of her wide reach, they tried to go with one that would probably lead to the least amount of.
Yeah. And also, just not to be really nitpicky, but she got it in 2017, technically, because she was a part of the Silence Breakers.
Mm.
Because if you remember, she got groped at a concert and she sued the guy for $1.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
She got groped at a concert. She told her mom about it. And then they told the guy's radio station.
Mm-hmm.
So he got fired. So then he sued her. So she countersued him for $1, being like, I just want to establish the fact that, like, you groped me. And this is not me trying
to,
like,
money thing. Yeah.
Make money off of you. So she was a part of the Silent Breakers because she pointed out the fact that, because she was sexually assaulted and she reported it. Which is a notable thing for a person to do, no matter, you know, your wealth, stature, position in society.
And I think mostly even having her as the person of the year, I think a lot of what she's backed by, especially why her fan base is so huge, obviously it's made up predominantly like women. And I think the whole idea of it is supposed to be a feminist thing of like, you know, here we have the like one of the most influential getting to like Michael Jackson level. Like, you know, I think it was in Rio, they literally put her like her name on the cross.
Yeah.
Like that's beyond to me.
Yeah.
So obviously in terms of impact, yes, but I guess it's also backed by the idea of like, it's a feminism thing. Like we have a, you know, a woman.
Okay.
Power.
But how has Michael Jackson not gotten it? Again, like if Michael Jackson gotten it, I'd be like, you know what? Yeah. Taylor Swift is fine. But it's just that she's the first musician since I believe 1932 to be on the cover. And I'm going to look up because I have it next to me of like a list of all the Times People of the Year. So I'm going to go to 1932 to see who it was.
Yeah. Who is this musician?
Oh, it wasn't even a musician. It was Franklin D. Roosevelt.
Oh, perfect.
I think she's the first musician, period.
Really?
Yeah.
But you see what I mean? If this was most to be yeah, supposed to be more of like a look how much influence a woman can have on the global stage. I mean, one can argue then the Me Too men of the Silence Breakers, that's the same idea.
Yeah. Also, and they gave it to American women in 1975.
Okay, so I don't,
I don't know. They've given it to objects before. They've given it
objects,
to
really?
1982, the computer. 1988, the endangered person, Earth.
Yeah.
Newt Gingrich.
Who were you going to say was the short list of people who would have gotten it?
Yes. So I looked up a short list of the people who could have won it. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to tell Kat, and I don't want to say you're going to tell me if they're more or less deserving, because I feel like we're beating a dead horse at this point, but you're going to tell me if you could see a tangible argument as to why this person should be Time Person of the Year. The Hollywood Strikers. So the actors and screenwriters who went on strike throughout the year.
Okay. So what you were saying off the air, we say such good things off the air, was more, I think I like the broader message of that. I mean, like you were saying that it's been the year of strikes, so many people make taking a stand. Yeah. But I think even the argument that a lot of people made was really like, I'm supposed to feel empathy for the people getting paid only $200,000 for writing an episode as opposed to $300,000. You get what I'm saying?
Like, yeah.
So I think that one, not so much. People focus on media. They're not gonna. No.
Yeah. But also, the great thing with the strikes is that, like, people have an idea of, like, actors and writers, they make bank.
Yeah.
When it's like, no. A few people you know make bank. The everyday actor that you see every once in a while on a TV show, they are not making bank.
Oh, my God. For some reason, I have this vision of these actors who were making these videos after the strike was done, was like, finally, let's get back to work. This has been horrible. And they haven't worked since, like, 2017.
What I saw was Nina Dobrev.
Yeah. Poor thing. Girl, you haven't worked. What do you mean it's finally time to get back?
Yeah. Then you have Taylor Swift.
Okay.
Who won? Sam Altman. Do you know who Sam Altman is?
Sam Altman. Hold on.
He is the former CEO. No, he was the former CEO. He got reinstated of OpenAI, of ChatGPT, the parent company.
No way. My king.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. There's some murky things when ChatGPT. We could do a whole episode on that because we're both comm scholars. And they will beat you to death in communication studies.
Oh, my God, about AI.
About AI. I mean, they have reason to do it. Then you have the Trump prosecutors. So the prosecutors who are, prosecuting Donald Trump.
That one feels like a dead horse as well.
Barbie.
Hey, that actually could have been fun. That one would have been fun. I like that.
Vladimir Putin.
Okay, he's back.
He got in 2007.
You know what? I really like the AI idea. I really do. I think probably because of my comms class and realizing how much it's part of like our lives now. I think that one's a great one.
King Charles III.
No. I watched The Crown. That's not happening. That's not happening. I hate that guy.
I mean, season 3 and season 4 were like really good. I mean, season 3 was great at setting up his character. Season 4 was great at making you realize that he was a garbage person.
I could get too into that. We're going to have to.
And the last person is Jerome Powell, who is the chairman of the Federal Reserve. He is the person in charge. No. Is he the person? I'm pretty sure he's the person in charge of deciding inflation rates.
Hmm.
Or that might be Janet Yellen.
Hmm.
My memory is very much failing me, but he's the chairman of the Federal Reserve.
I don't know. Which one are you feeling from this list? That's a weird list to begin with.
Did I say Xi Jinping? I think I forgot it.
No.
Xi Jinping, the president of China.
Okay. Which one are you feeling here? I'm actually kind of shocked with this list, and there's got to be something else, right, that we're missing.
It's very American-centric, which, like, is to be expected, because Times is an American publication.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I would have given it to the strikers, because they went on strike for, like, 3 months.
That's true.
And I think for a lot of people, that's the first time they saw how greedy billionaires could be.
Yeah, honestly.
And a lot of people, they needed that to see that billionaires are not your friend.
I feel maybe if the strike had been longer, maybe, you know, for terms of, like, you know, because I'm even trying to think, like, okay, again, with, like, Gaza, maybe it's because it's October. It's too late in the year to define the year in itself. Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, Ukraine, Russia, well, I mean, that started in end of February of last year. Yeah. So maybe it's something like
strike started in May.
I don't know.
Because I remember the premiere of Oppenheimer, they had to leave because they were on strike.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they had to push the premiere by, like, a few hours so that the actors could attend. Because they walked the carpet and then they left.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But yeah, no, in talking to your point, I think I don't like Sam Altman, but I feel like he was.
Yeah.
Because when you AI, I'm pretty sure was the word of one of the words of the years for one of
the only one that I remember is that the word of the year was Riz. That's the one thing I saw.
There's another one where I think in the French one, the word of the year was artificial intelligence.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I honestly, I mean, I can even speaking for myself and most of the people that I know don't like hold me to this. AI is very much like a daily part of my life.
Yeah.
Very much. Well, even if it's not even if we're just talking like ChatGPT, it can like be a multitude of things.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, I feel like one can argue that's, especially for 2023, like.
And while we're on the topic of Taylor Swift, I have to say, okay, I have to make a point that, like, this is not unique to Taylor Swift.
Mm-hmm.
This point applies to Beyonce. It applies to mm-hmm. Rihanna. It applies to any celebrity. Just because you like them and they're a billionaire does not mean that they are ethical. An yeah. ethical billionaire is an oxymoron. You do not only get rich off of your songs. That is not true. That is yeah. a lie propagated to you by capitalism to make you feel better. Ethical billionaires do not exist.
Yeah. So I think that's what we're getting at is that, okay, when we're talking about Taylor Swift in terms of impact, sure, no one's going to deny that. I mean, I think it's pretty obvious she has a huge impact right now. But in terms of what exactly are we supporting here? Because she stands in for, I don't know, liberal feminism. Is that supposed to be it?
The theory I heard is that she's very easy to like self-insert yourself.
Mm.
It's easy to yeah. like project your life onto her life. I mean, I can't not really relate, but you know.
Yeah, I know.
Her demographic.
For her demographic, yeah, I think it's very easy to do. Oh, she's very relatable. Very like, there's nothing too. I don't know. There's nothing too edgy about her. It's very.
Her lyrics grow with you.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, again, that's why the same thing where people can go to Taylor Swift with their mom, because yeah. it's the same idea. Like, everyone is going to be able to relate to this. Yeah.
Again, I sometimes relate to Taylor Swift. I am not a hater. How can a person know everything at 18 and nothing at 21? That's me.
That's so relatable. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I will take that to my dying breath, but I don't know. Her fan base is just absolutely crazy. Like, I really like, and everyone, seriously, I have experienced this firsthand as someone who does not like, generally listen to Taylor Swift all the time.
Seeing how big her fan yes. base was a shock for me.
Yeah. It's like people, especially when the tour tickets were coming out, it's like out of nowhere you were finding people who suddenly now had this like insane passion for her. And I was like, oh, I thought we all just kind of like mildly like enjoyed this. Like I thought that's what made somebody popular. Everyone like generally agreeing, oh yeah, that's good. But no, people are diehard.
Yeah, no, I first realized it when, remember when she was selling one of her albums where it's like, oh, you could buy four of them and they make a clock.
Mm-hmm.
And people bought four of them. And I'm like, oh.
Wow. So that's who we are now.
Yeah. I was like, wow. People really loved, like, I knew people liked her.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't realize people, what caused the Taylor Swift renaissance? Because I remember back in 2015, she was huge. I remember that when I was in high school.
But again, she had that same kind of vibe of what I was saying before of like everyone kind of generally liked her. It wasn't some like you found people like with this like.
Because then the Kanye thing happened.
Yeah.
And then she went into hiding and she came back for Lover. I think it's during the pandemic probably. She released the albums back to back.
It's out of nowhere. So do you see what I mean? So then it's like, okay, am I supposed to think, am I contradicting myself here where I start saying, okay, then actually 2023 was her huge comeback, and then you could argue that she's been one of the top people this year. So now I just contradicted myself for the entire thing.
Yeah, I really don't know. I don't know. Taylor Swift kind of perplexed me. But again, I don't want to piss off her fans because they're very passionate people in a good way, in a bad way.
Well, see, that's what I mean. She's become such a stand-in.
Yeah.
But like you said, because of her relatability, she's become such a stand-in for like just women in general that immediately if you feel like maybe you're not super inclined to her, people literally take it as an anti-feminist statement. I'm not kidding. I have been literally like accused of that, which is such a wild like conception because I don't listen to Lover.
Yeah. Oh my God. No, I remember I was talking to my cousin and I said something to the effect of hell hath no fury like a Swiftie scorned.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, wow, that's funny. I'm like, but it's true. It's true. Yeah. Do you want to move on to a little musical break?
I
and
would
then...
love to. Just a nice little song.
Okay. So you said nice little song. This is I don't know. We're going to play. This is Sacristé by A la Claire Ensemble because we have to fill our quota of Canadian music. I'm going to be honest here.
Okay, perfect.
But yeah, this is Sacristé.
Filou Purpy, sacré zèbre! Ça va pas, Vigo, on peut se promener en bétain. Ox des plats pour des types pour la semaine. Toujours plus vert, chez le voisin. Chez le voisin, y'a tout le monde. L'herbe est toujours plus vert, chez le voisin. Fais-moi du pain, bébé, fais les maisons. Fais les goûter, y'a plus mettre du gluten. Fais les doubler, y'a plus mettre des mitins. Bébé, fais les tripler, puis j'appelle ça du prêt. C'était pas mal, c'est du stop. C'était pas mal, c'est du stop. Alphabétique dans le street, un peu plus phonétique dans les scripts. Tu rentres par le B, tu passes par le C, tu finis dans le B. Tu me dis dans ton track que c'est subliminal, puis t'es rien que minable. Tu compètes et tu caches sur le gars qui fait tes push-up à une main sur mon regard. Une image vaut mille mots, mais les tiens, ils faisaient rien partout. Fait que dans la balance, y'aurait même pas 500 sous. Tu retournes à laver des blanchets très bien. Un clip. Un pourboire, un conseil, reste mince. Ferme ta gueule, tailleuse, puis parle plus jamais de mon prêt. Vis ta vie de bloc, de mode, cesse ton rap de gonzesse. T'as ça que dis au complet quand t'as dit que t'as fait un bon prêt.
And that was Ce que c'était by A la Claire Ensemble. You're listening to Girls Meet World on 90.3 CKUT. I don't know where I was going with that.
I always forget that last part.
Yeah.
Okay, so for this next segment, this is something I've been thinking about recently, especially now that we're in final season. These little interactions that I have with people mean so much more when I am going through so much turmoil in my head. Sometimes someone just opening the door for me can be such a nice little lift to my spirit for the day. And I saw this tweet that made me think about this a little bit. Okay, so this tweet is talking about a TikTok, as most tweets now. So here the caption of the TikTok says, "When the cashier at Trader Joe's tries to start a conversation with me," I'm assuming the audio is something about "don't talk to me." The comments say things around, "No, because when they start asking questions after 'how are you,' I get mad." Another question or another comment, right? Like, I just want to get in and out. Other comment here. Me too. Like, what do you even want from me? Now, the person responding to this TikTok said, "I used to get exhausted with this when I was a miserable human, but then one day I was like, what if this is the only kind interaction this person gets today? So I always make a point to ask how the cashier is doing and ask about their interest if they're brought up, et cetera, et cetera."
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember when I worked at A&W.
Oh my God, you worked at A&W.
I worked at A&W. It was my first ever job. I felt so happy when people were nice to me.
Yeah.
It made my day because I had to stand there for 4 hours during a shift where I was like not being paid well, minimum mm-hmm. wage, had to clean toilets and fetch people's orders. And sometimes the customer made my job 15 times more yeah. hard than it had to be.
Yeah.
My first day on the job, I was yelled at the drive-thru.
Oh, my God.
So I always valued when people were nice to me.
Of course. I feel like... Now, I'm not going to say that fits for everyone because I do think some people, it is such a, like... It's such a mind-numbing kind of work that you really do just kind of want to have this, like, little kind of veil of... Whatever, don't talk to me, or we're just going to get this transaction done and that's the end of the day. But I think even if the worker's going to have that, or even if the customer's going to have that, either way, as long as there's like an air of at least politeness, I feel like it just makes it better for everybody.
Yeah.
And I think we just have a huge... I'm going to get into my rant. Hot take. Our generation has a huge problem with... using individualism and my rights, my worth is more important than anybody's to an unbelievable extent now.
It's funny that you say that when social scientists say that we have a loneliness epidemic.
Yeah, like, I think they're all connected. I think we believe there's no sense of community anymore. There's no sense of, I could tie this to 1,000 things. This could be a thesis right here. I think it's so tied to, I'm going to get there. I'm going to get to the top doing what I'm going to do. I'm alone in this. This is my own path. And there's no sense of community anymore. And I'm going to relate this to another tweet that I saw, which is like, we don't owe each other anything. If your friend is asking you to help for help if they need to move into their house or they need a ride from the airport, it is not up to you to help them. And that is outside of your friendship contract. And if a friend wants to come to you, let's say they're struggling with something, you do not need to handle their emotional labor. That is what they need a therapist to digress for them. I think that is beyond wild.
Yeah.
We have crossed over into something insane here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I find it ridiculous how we have such this, like, insistence on, like, being on our own.
Mm-hmm.
But then we complain about it. That's the crazy thing. Because, like, today, had I not had friends in my class, I would have spent the entire day talking to nobody.
Yeah.
And that sucks. The days where you, like, talk to no one, for me at least, they really, really suck.
Do you see what I mean? I think... So... I also saw this TikTok where this guy was talking about how if you, let's say you get to a place early, you're meeting a friend at like a cafe or something, right when you get there, you immediately, nine out of 10 times, you're pulling out your phone if that friend isn't there already.
Yeah.
You're pulling out your phone and you don't like, I know everyone's just in their own little bubble and anything to stop that boredom right away, I'm going to pull out my phone, make sure I like distract my mind, stimulate it. I know this is what it means. I think I get, even me, the idea of getting to a place and not pulling out my phone and then what's the alternative? I'm supposed to talk to the next person next to me. I think I get why that sounds ridiculous, but it used to not be ridiculous.
Oh my God. The idea of like someone talking on the bus to you.
Yeah.
And I'm guilty of that because like a week ago I was taking the bus home from actually being in the studio.
Yeah.
Someone was talking to me on the bus and I was like, I'm not interested.
Yeah.
Stop talking to me. But it's like, I could have just been nice.
I know, but I don't know. It's such a weird intersection there because I know I feel that too immediately. I'm like, why is this person bothering me? And immediately I start tying it to, they've got to have some hidden undertone of violence here or something. There's no way they're talking to me if they don't want to like insinuate something crazy. And I don't know, maybe it is because no one does it anymore who's just a genuine person that immediately the person who's going to try to start a conversation with you, they got to be
so I was going to say, so as a woman.
I was going to
like, say, when a man comes up to talk to you, you're always thinking there's some ulterior motive here.
Of course.
Which sucks.
Even if a woman talks to me, though, then I convince myself, no, okay, there's something else going on here now. I don't know.
Yeah, it's so weird how we've like... Because, like, human beings were, like, supposed to be social animals.
Exactly.
And I'm really, like, tired of people trying to argue that we're not when it's, like, no.
Yeah.
Like, one of the things that... Okay, because I've been, I think 3-ish months ago, I was like, I've been reading, watching The Martian.
Mm.
And, like, in that book, it's framed as a comedy. The fact that, you know, this man is stuck on the Mars for, you know, like, a year and a half. But when you think about it, he's stuck with no one to talk to for a year and a half. And he doesn't go crazy. He kind of goes a little bit crazy in the movie.
But they really don't, like, I actually just watched that, like, a month ago. I mean, mean, half the time you just see him playing the same CDs that the other astronauts left him for, like, I don't know, a year, and he seems fine. Oh, he's had
no, but remember the scene where he gets launched up and for the first time he hears the voice of another person and he starts crying?
I don't remember that, but
there's scene where he's up and he listens to Jessica Chastain's like, hey, we came back to get you, and he starts crying because it's the first time he's talked to a person in a year and a half. Like, I think it plays on you mentally.
The movie didn't make it very explicit. I think it's obviously you have to, I think what we just get from it, what watching it is like, okay, he just has to be resilient because there's not another choice and he just has to push through and he's just a tough guy and that's how he got through it. But I don't think they make it clear enough of the mental toll.
Like, the author said that. I have the book. He was like, yeah, I didn't really want to make it on like the mental aspects. Like, you should have.
You should have, though. It's supposed to be. I think that's one of the big things about the whole thing about nobody can hear you scream in space. I think that's like a huge topic of most like horror movies. I think that's the whole idea of it. Like,
do you know how many astronauts get like PTSD or get depression after they come back from?
Girl, I would too. Unbelievable. I think you can either have like a total spiritual, literally out of body experience, or you come back and
existential crisis.
Like anytime I see, I think it's what, the blue dot photo. I think anytime I see that, I immediately, I'm launched into existentialism, not space.
Yeah. To connect this back to people.
Going there with something. Hold on. Oh yeah. It's one thing, this whole individualism thing, it's one thing I really felt living in Res last year. I kept thinking, I remember in Res sometimes they have like yearbooks that they would have from, I don't know, the 80s or the 70s. And I even have my mom's description of what residence life used to look like. And I would think about how I had these people on my floor. We all followed each other on social media. We all were liking each other's posts, liking each other's stories, texting. If I saw them in the bathroom, best believe we're not saying hi. Which I thought, I kept thinking, it's not a big deal because I get it. Sometimes, girl, it's early morning. I didn't want to run into you here. You didn't want to run into me. You'd rather be alone. It's communal. But I found it so odd that we had this whole like relationship. And chances are if we saw each other outside of Res, we weren't going to say hi to each other. And it just didn't work like that before. Like even before I would go and knock on somebody's door, I would text them, hey, can I come to your room? That's like just not how it worked before. Everything was like, I think COVID made it even worse.
Yeah.
We have these lives online. Like I think Res is the perfect idea where I used to think about how you didn't tell somebody, hey, let's meet at this time downtown. You just ran into people and hoped for the best.
Yeah. It's like how back in the day before you had phones, you would call someone on their landline and be like, hey, let's go to the mall at 4 o'clock. And you would just like cross your fingers that they'd turn up. Cause if they were late, and you left your house, there was no way of you knowing that. And it was like so much easier to make friends.
Yeah. I think that's what it relates to the point of like, if I got to a place early and my friend's not there, I'm immediately pulling out my phone. Not even for a second. Like, I think someone made even a point. Someone was commenting on one of those Twitter users, like listening hours or something. It was like something crazy where they was like, girl, did you ever listen
on Spotify?
Yeah. They were like, girl, did you ever listen to the birds chirping or like the leaves falling?
Oh, is it the girl who got like 105,000 hours?
Like that. Something crazy where it's like, I don't know. There's so many distractions. Like, I'm not trying to say that I'm not on TikTok for at least an hour or 2 hours a day.
I'm trying to be so much better about that.
I think I really need to.
Recently, what I did, I turned off my data plan for TikTok. So I can't watch videos when I'm like not connected to the Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
And I brought a book. I have a book with me. So everywhere I'm forced to read. Today, my reading is like the Canadian Constitution. Very boring. But, you know, like normally I'd have like, you know, a fun book that I want to read to like try to really force myself that like I'm not on TikTok.
Yeah.
I'm like listening to music and like reading my book.
I think it's just last night I finished one of my papers and of course I wanted to just treat myself. I was like, oh, I should relax. I should just lay in my room. And then I find myself 2 hours in. I think about how the reality of what I'm doing here, that it's just me in my bed on my phone. And I know that sounds like when I say it like that, just so objectively, it's like, what's wrong with that? But I think about how like I'm literally just in my room looking at a screen. Like there's nothing there. Like even when I find myself on TikTok, I know I'm swiping. And there's nothing like, I'm not really interested. It's just, when I'm doing mundane things, it's like just for the noise in the background that I think for walks, like say my walks to school, they're pretty long. I live in the plateau that I'm able to, you know, have that whole, oh, it's so pretty. And I can, you know, disconnect for a little bit, but anything that's not like just as stimulating as that, immediately the phone is out.
Yeah. I was gonna say, have you seen the TikTok that was like, when you finish your college, when you finish college on a random Tuesday at 5 p.m. online, I'm like, that has to suck.
Yeah.
To like going through like a momentous, okay, like, because I finished CJEP online at home because COVID was happening.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, I just finished one of the like most significant part of my life online alone at home. My parents weren't there. They weren't here to witness it.
Yeah.
But that's sad that you don't have that like communal sharing of experience, which is why I'll never make fun of people who have like graduation parties and like really extravagant birthdays. Cause I'm like, you know what? You're engaging in the communal experience, which
Well, that's actually could lead to a whole other bigger thing about how we like to, for people who dramatize the events in their lives, I don't get what the point is. If someone is like, oh my God, now I'm going to start sounding nihilistic, but like, why not? If someone's enjoying themselves, if someone is happy with what they're doing, who am I to now judge you and say, oh, but you're doing too much now? Who set the rules on what's doing too much? I don't know. I was going to relate this to a whole other thing too of like, of course, I decided I needed to watch a video essay this week.
Which one did you watch?
It was The Erasure of Third Places.
I saw a video on that of a girl trying to find a new third place.
Yeah.
And she was like, oh, a restaurant. And people were like, a restaurant is not a third place because it's a business.
It's ridiculous. Like, I think I saw this TikTok. Oh,
can you explain to people what a third place is?
Girl, let's hope.
Okay. For those who don't know.
Let's hope.
Because we're not having
Okay, so I'm assuming, okay. Let me make sure I got this right. First place would be
home.
Second place is a workplace, or I guess in our case, it could be like the school place. And then usually back in before the millennium, people would have a third communal place that you would go to outside of these things where you would just go find people from your community. That could be a bar. That could be, I don't know.
For us, it would be this radio station. It's kind of a third place. We're not getting paid to be here, so it's not a job.
Exactly. That would be your third place. And you wouldn't, again, this wouldn't be a planned thing, relating back to what we said before of, oh,
a park.
Yeah. It just, you would go and you would find people there, and that would be your separate area. Void of the things from your first and second place. And we just do not have that at all anymore. I think especially even with now, even people working from home, now your first place and your second place are combined and there is nothing else.
That's one of the things. I know that people love working remote, and like, I will agree to some level. Yeah. I would like working remote, but I just really need that physical separation of like, I leave my work at work, and when I'm at home, and I don't need to think about the things about work. Because my dad's a teacher, and when he was doing COVID, our home became like his workplace and our school, and my dad got burned out really quickly.
Yeah. I think it was the same case for my mom, because I think they preach so much about, oh, the 9-to-5 healthy lifestyle. Please, like, it's not happening. You know, so many things now, there's no more meetings, right? Because, oh, we're eradicating time and space. Like, oh, no more meetings. I'm just going to send you an email and you go do it. It leaves this feeling of there's always something to do. If there's no more timed things where you're meeting with people, everything is done on your own. So you have yourself to go back to of, so what has to get done? And some people don't have enough, especially when you're being forced by some executive. This could be for a multitude of jobs. No, some people don't have that self-regulation to say enough is enough, or don't even have the choice, you know, monetarily. Yeah. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Third places, they're really cool. Libraries, book clubs.
We all need a third place.
We all need a third place. What's your third? Do you have a third place?
I don't know. I actually think I've made a lot of points to friends sometimes where I was like, especially during final season, but I do this every final season where instead of working, I need to find all the problems in my life and solve them now as opposed to later.
I was going to say, is there a third place? Like, you know, the free sports classes that they offer during finals?
Oh my God. Yeah.
Have you ever taken one?
No, I haven't. Me neither. I had friends who did it and they said it was nice. But even, do you see what I mean? I'm going to make a bunch of complaints and then I'm not going to try and solve them. Yeah. It's only that I want to complain. That's it.
Yeah, no, because I was going to say, I really wanted to take a yoga class because I've never taken a yoga class. Yeah. I've done like yoga exercises, but I've never taken a class. And I've been like, oh, that'd be fun because I have like Zumba, which is kind of a third place. But I feel it's weird to pay to be a part of a third. I don't know that like necessarily.
I know. I guess when you put it like that, it does sound kind of odd, especially where we live, where, you know, nature's obviously going to be the one that's the most free already. That's a paradox there. But, you know, here where it's cold most of the time, where exactly are we going to find that first place or third place? Because I'm going to tell you it's not going to be at the park.
Yeah.
Way too cold for that.
It's way too cold for that. I was like, oh, a Sugar Shack. You have to, like, I feel like one of the rules of a third place is that it should be open.
Yeah.
Because if there was a financial barrier, it can't really be like a third place.
You know, I was finding more that again, it has most to do with our, like, our individualism yeah. thing, and that, you know, especially even families now, you just isolate yourself together in the home. There's no, like, the way that parents would go and, like, and have these, like, friends come over, and that's why this whole thing about, like, it takes a village or whatever when yeah. it's in terms of raising children. It was supposed to be this communal thing. I saw this woman on TikTok who, she's from Spain. I don't know what particular village. I'm assuming it's not something more, like, city-centric. That she's, like, she grew up where... Before, you know, you took the kids to class and then the parents would meet in the park. And if someone couldn't make it, another parent would take the child, and it wouldn't be this, like, you know, but can I come over for the play date? Will that be okay? Like, there was none yeah. of that, none of these regulations. And she said, moving here, nobody has it anymore. It's like, it's very like, I'm going to do my own thing.
Yeah.
You know, straight.
Oh, and like to say, the nuclear family is a capitalist invention. Just, I feel like the need to point that out, because yeah. the idea of, like, you know, you live in a house, you know, your mom, your dad, your siblings, if you have some. I don't.
I don't either.
You live with, you know, like, say you and I, we live with yeah, our parents. Yeah. And then one day we, when you get married or whatever, you move out, then you form your own family. And then your parents, they live in their house and you live in your house. And, like, that's not how yeah. it's supposed to be. Because my family, we all live within walking distance of one another.
Yeah.
There is never not someone from my family at my house. My house is, like, if ever there's an event or there's a holiday, everyone is meeting at yeah. my house. And, like, you know, if ever there's, like, I have two cousins who are, you know, in elementary school. My cousin's been on strike, and I've been, like, hanging out with her and doing yeah. stuff. And that's just, like, the way my family works. I was like, oh, do you want to go do this thing? And my mom and my aunt would just be like, yeah, take her. Like, I don't care. Like, just take her, go do things. You know, if ever there was an emergency, they'll drop them off. And I'm like, yeah, that's what family's yeah, supposed
exactly.
to be.
Exactly.
But now, can I talk about the phenomenon of, like, parents charging their child rent?
Yes, please.
I don't I get it.
Insane. I yeah. think it's insane. It's a complete Western thing. This is such an odd thing of...
I don't even think it's a Western thing, because I don't have that many friends who are, like, from, like, natively Quebecois yeah, who yeah. their parents do that.
I think it's more of the thing of, like, okay, when you're 18, it's more of, like... And more of, like, the broader thing that, you know... At least I know that how this is both how my parents grew up, that, okay, you moved out when you were married.
Like, my parents too.
Yeah, that's exactly how it worked. Like, this was none of this, like, okay, you're 18, off to school. Like, even the idea of me now, after I finish school, that I'm going to go now buy my own apartment already, that's, like, a crazy step too far. That's not how the rest of my cousins live at all. I'd be the first if I were to do that.
Me too.
Yeah. So, where was I going
with that? The idea of kicking out your children.
I just felt like sharing my life.
Kicking out your children's...
Yeah, exactly. It's such an odd... Why did you have a child? That's the whole idea when people say, oh, I'm going to have a child when I'm in my 20s, so that when in my 40s, I'm going to go party and it's going to be my responsibilities done. What responsibility is over?
You're a parent for life.
You're a parent for life. I know for a fact, me, I'm 19. My mom gets more calls now than she did when I was in high school.
I'm 21. Beginning of the year, I, like, fainted in my own house.
Oh, my gosh.
I was fine. I just didn't eat enough. This is very TMI. I have an eating disorder. It's a whole thing.
Oh, my God.
We don't need to get into it. But I collapsed in my house.
Yeah.
The first person that the paramedics called were my parents.
Yeah.
Because my parents are my emergency yeah. contact. And if anything happened to me, my parents would take care of me. That's just, like, the expectation. And if I need money, I can ask my parents and they'll give it to me. Because I find it so weird viewing, like, your children as a burden. Because a lot of people do. And I think it's because, again, capitalism and, you know, just society. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're inclined of, like, oh, once you get married, the next thing you have to do is to have children. But yeah. not every person deserves to be a parent. Like, every child deserves a parent, but not every parent deserves a child.
Ooh. That's a good one.
But it's true. Like, some people, it's like, if... Because, you know...
You just got me... Did you hear this whole thing with Dinks?
Yes.
Dual income, no kids. There you go. People are so upset at people literally just living their lives. However, like, they'll make a point actually in counter to what you were saying about how nuclear family is a product of capitalism. They say that Dinks are actually a further product of capitalism.
I don't think it is, but yeah.
They made this point of, like, okay, it was this couple, and they were saying, we're Dinks. It's basically, okay, the video...
The trend is you yeah. say we're something, and then you say a line that relates to it. So it'd be like... We're McGill students. We have to walk up an entire hill to get to class.
Exactly like that. So one of them was like, we're Dinks. I get to go play golf 3 times a week and don't have to go pick up a kid after. Like, something like that or anything like that. Anyways, someone made points about saying how all of the things that they were mentioning had to do with consumption. you know, basically relating that this has nothing to do with like the actual joy of being a human. All the things that they want are things that have to do with something monetary.
But to that, I'd say like there's an aspect, like a lot of people have kids for the sake of having kids and they don't realize that, like, I've been thinking about this recently. Mm-hmm. Having a child, like, you are responsible for that person.
I think
it's, and I'm like, that thing. Is, I think that is the scariest thing ever, that like your kid could turn out to be a horrible person in part because of you.
Yeah.
That scares me.
I think
I get why people would want to opt out of that.
Yeah. I think it's wild that, why would we be mad at people who, wouldn't you rather someone really want a child? I don't get this whole thing. All the comments are filled with, but they'll never know the true joy of a child running up to them. I'm sure there is a great joy in that, but why would you want someone to be a parent if they don't see it?
Yeah.
I don't understand what we're arguing for here, because I don't know.
Also, the world is full of terrible parents.
Exactly.
You don't need to add to them. And also to add to that, do you know how much it has to suck to be a kid and knowing that you're not wanted? Because, like, kids are smarter than people give them credit for. Like, if you're arguing all the time with your partner, your kid is going to notice.
Yeah.
Even if you think they're not, they're going to pick up on it. And so if it's really obvious.
See, that's what I mean. That also relates to the fear of being a parent. Every little thing I do. My God, once you learn, like, child development or human development, I think you just get freaked out.
While we're on the topic of human development, I need to talk about, okay, because we have teachers on strike.
Mm-hmm.
My dad is a teacher. Again, this show needs to relate to local politics. My dad's a teacher.
Yeah.
Not elementary, but he's just like a normal teacher.
Okay.
But I was talking to my coworkers because I work at like a center that gives like after school help for homework.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of parents, they see school as just like babysitting.
Yeah.
And not like an institution where you're sending your child to like be prepared for life and to learn. And that relates to, I don't know if you saw the TikTok of the teacher who was in seventh grade saying that, I have seventh graders who are reading
on
a fourth grade level.
Yeah.
That is not normal. You can't blame the pandemic anymore.
Yeah.
What are you doing at home? You're supposed to be reading with your child.
What's going on at home? Exactly. That is such a great point. I think so many parents send their kids to school and assume the work is going to be done for them. I know for a fact for me, it was not a, you go to school and, though that's the teacher's job. Absolutely not. I mean, we're going to say from someone who's taking care of you, well, this was my schedule, from 9 to 2:30 is supposed to form and shape your brain. I know my mom went over those multiplication like tables with me 100 times. Like, it was an active part of your child's life. It's such
Dad checked my homework to be sure that I made it. I wasn't allowed to watch TV because, you know, phones were not, they were a thing, but like everyone had like flip phones and like, you know, like the first iPhones.
Yeah.
So I couldn't watch TV during the week. That was like a rule. You can listen to the radio, but you can't watch TV. Mm-hmm. Like that's like no, or you have like one TV show you can watch.
Yeah.
Or I had a Leapfrog.
Oh my God. I had a Leapfrog too.
I could use my Leapfrog. I loved
my
Leapfrog.
God, I love that.
But like, you know, and my parents, it's like, if you're bored, read. Like, I'm not gonna like cure your boredom with TV. Like, find something to do. Use your imagination.
I mean, does this go with gentle parenting or something where it's just we kind of let the child do what it wants? Or
I mean, people confuse gentle parenting with like permissive parenting, which is not at all the same thing.
Yeah.
Gentle parenting is not just give your kid a tablet and hope for the best.
Yeah.
Because it is crazy to me that you have kids who are like addicted to their tablet in like first grade.
There will be like, I swear I've seen this with, I don't have any like little cousins, but I've seen it with some of my friends and their little cousins who will pick up an iPad and know, like we're talking like 5 years old and know how to use it better than me.
Yeah.
That's kind of ridiculous. That's ridiculous. The thing is, again, this is what I'm saying. This relates back to the whole responsibility of being a parent. I can't tell you that I'm not going to stick an iPad in my kid's face.
Yeah, I also can't know that for sure.
I get it. Like, no sleep. Even the whole, like, the Cocoa Melon thing that you just, like, the kid's crying, you can't stop. I'm just going to put them in front of Cocoa Melon for, like, 2 hours. Like, I completely understand it.
Yeah.
I get it. I think maybe the comment more is about how these resources are so readily available now that it's more. It's
also,
just,
support for parents is lacking.
Of course.
Because if you're, like, you know, if you're home alone with a crying baby and, like, a toddler just, like, annoying the hell out of you, like, what are you going to do? You're going to stick a tablet. And I get it. Like, if you don't have support from anyone.
I'm trying to think what my parents even did with me, honestly.
I remember my parents were at every single parent-teacher meeting, and if my teacher said anything bad, I would get, like, the talking of the century.
But do you see what I mean? So the teacher that mentions that says, like, these kids are completely behind, I think it was even something I read it, there was a district in Pennsylvania where not a single eighth grader passed the math efficiency test.
Yeah.
Not a single one. We're talking like millions here. Not a single one. I think that, like, you know, and obviously there's so many attributes you could put to that. Obviously the pandemic as well. But there has to be of, there's no way. I mean, these efficiency tests are at the end of the year. There's no way as a parent you don't know by the middle of the year that the kid's not getting it.
Yeah.
Especially if they're not passing. So like you said about a parent being at every like parent-teacher interview. Like,
not even that. They send you emails nowadays. Yeah. They send you emails. They'll call to be like, hey, Tommy's not doing well in math. I think you just need to, you know, work a little bit more on it.
Yeah, and I think the teacher was mentioning some things like that on TikTok of like the parents being like, well, that's your job. Like, you take care of that. What are they?
Teaching is a two-way job. My dad was always like, my dad became besties with the teachers because he was a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So like, there was no way in hell I was going to misbehave in a class without my dad hearing about it.
Oh my God.
And like, but my dad took it really seriously. Like, my dad's not that good in science, but he still tried.
Yeah. Does he teach? What kind of age does he teach?
He did elementary for a bit and then he hated it. Then he went to high school for a bit. He hated it. Now he teaches adults how to speak French.
I think that's people who actually want to learn, right? So I think that's a way different. Like, I think that's one of the big things, especially with like half of your job as a teacher is even just trying to engage the students, let alone actually teaching them. Like, it's one thing to just like, here's actually the content. Let's try to learn it. Well, here, now you got to actually have to make them care.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's complicated. I don't want to be like, I'm dreading having kids because, listen, this is public record, so I don't want to say anything.
If my kid comes in the future and watches this.
Yeah. But I don't know. Like, it's scary. But I'm happy that people are talking about how scary it is instead of like trying to like sugarcoat it nowadays.
We can't minimize the idea of having it. I think it has to be like, oh my God, you know what we should talk about after this? Trad wife.
We don't have the time, but just know that I wrote an entire paper.
Did you really?
For my comms class about the crunchy mom to trad wife to right-wing fascist pipeline. Yeah. I would love to talk about trad wives. If we had an extra hour, I would be all up in the, you know what, in the 5 minutes-ish minutes that we have, let's talk about trad wives. Do you want to explain what a trad wife is?
You know what? You're the one who wrote the paper on it.
Okay, so a trad wife is a woman who purports... Oh, shit. I just realized I spelled the word wrong on my text. Oh, well. Who purports to adhere to, like, you know, traditional values, i.e. being a homemaker, staying at home with the kids, you know, not working, taking care of the house, things like that.
And, like... identifies as that. Like, this is not identifies like a term that's like given to them.
As
like,
that.
They 1000% take that.
Okay. I just need to say there is nothing wrong if you decide to opt out of the workforce. I'm a little bit scared for you if you do, but there's nothing wrong with like choosing to opt out of like the workforce. But I don't know if the problem a lot of men who are like, yeah, I want a traditional wife. And then they like accuse a woman who wants to be a traditional wife of being a gold digger. So it's like, which one is it?
What are you looking for exactly? Oh my God. I think it's just too presumptuous of of a situation here. I think even if you find two people who are looking for both of the same thing, like, no. I think it's way too scary to put all your faith financially and on your, like, for your kids.
On someone else.
For both sides. I think that's, like, a complete, like, that's way too scary.
I could never imagine telling my parents I am opting out of, like, working. For a reason that's not like I'm going on maternity leave.
I know. Oh my God, that even, I think I saw a TikTok yesterday about a stay-at-home girlfriend. What the hell?
I also wrote a paper on that. Which, you know what's funny? She is a stay-at-home girlfriend, but what is funny is that she's making money off of being a stay-at-home girlfriend.
Yeah. I mean, because she's going to end up being a content creator.
Yeah, because she's a content creator. So, like, yeah, she's a stay-at-home girlfriend, but I mean, she still has. Stay-at-home
girlfriend? What does that even mean? What do you mean you're a stay-at-home girlfriend? What's like?
See, I was gonna say, when you're a stay-at-home mom or like you're married, at least if you get divorced, you're getting something.
I'm like, yeah, exactly. Like,
Not saying everyone should get married, but like, if you're at least like have some type of contract in place, if you're gonna be a stay-at-home girlfriend, that like if you break up,
that something's good. I actually saw a comment that said exactly that on like the TikTok. It was like, I also saw this this post on Facebook actually, and it was this guy talking about how he works 70-hour weeks and he comes home and his wife hasn't made dinner for him, and but she claims that it's just really hard to take care of the baby. Sometimes she's so tired she can't even like walk, And he immediately was like, honestly, I've communicated that I want, like, the house to be clean and dinner to be made. So, like, what am I supposed to do now?
Cook.
No, literally, pick up a knife. Go on TikTok. There's a lot of tutorials on how to make food for beginners. I don't know. Watch the Food Network like the rest of us.
I think that's ridiculous. I think even the way I'm not mentioning the other part of the post. He said, well, what should I do now? I don't think I can kick her out. What? What? What's going on here now?
Yeah.
What's going on here? Anyway, yeah. I went on a tangent there.
Yeah. So with a little bit of 5 minutes left.
Oh, yes.
We have our recommendations of the month, which is like one of my favorite segments where we recommend something that you should read, watch, listen to
and do
eat. Sometimes we have recipe. Do you want to go first or do you want me to go first?
Actually, I will go first because last time I totally butchered it. I had no idea what to say, but now Carla actually prepped me on what to say. So now we're good. I can't recommend enough the Before trilogy. Basically, you follow a couple who meet from when they're 20, and through the span of three movies, you watch them from when they reconnect from that one meeting and to when they're now married.
I was so convinced that for 2024, they're going to make a fourth one, but really? I don't think they are.
I don't think they should. Oh,
they shouldn't.
God.
It's a perfect trilogy.
Oh, it's okay.
It's really good. What's your favorite one?
You know what? Personally, I read something that when I first watched the very beginning that said you should parcel these movies out in different times of your life to understand them differently. So I did do that. So I just recently watched Before Midnight. I have to say, I think that's actually my favorite
Before Midnight?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is really good.
I think, oh my God, it's fantastic. I think.
Because I'm in like Before like Sunrise is the first one.
Before Sunrise is the...
Before Sunrise, we're in Before Sunrise age.
Yes, exactly.
So I think it, like, you relate the most.
Yes.
I loved Before Sunset.
Yeah, oh my God. Oh my God, it's just so good. I have to give one of the quotes. Just one of the quotes. It's okay, if you didn't get already, it's a love story.
Yeah.
Okay, and one of the quotes is, when you're young, you assume you're going to meet all these people and have all these amazing connections. And when you get older, you realize it only happens a few times. Anyway.
It's a great movie.
Okay,
Ethan Hawke, Julie Delpy.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
Okay, Carla.
That's one of my, I have a Letterboxd account now, and it's one of my four movies.
Oh my gosh.
It's so good. I'm going to recommend, so I went to go see the movie Saltburn last week with two of my friends. I'm going to give you the most bare bones premise I can, because it's a movie that's better experienced, like, if you know very little going into it. But you have Oliver, who is played by Barry Keoghan, who gets invited to his rich friend Felix, played by Jacob Elordi's house for the summer called Saltburn. It's an English estate, and things happen. That's all. All you need to know is things happen. And it was a fun time, but at the same time, there were times where I was just sinking in my seat of like cringing.
Oh my God.
Or like some things happened where I was just like viscerally disgusted.
Perfect.
Yeah.
I know. I'm convinced.
Go watch it. It's really good. And if I could give another recommendation, May December on Netflix.
Oh yeah.
Really good.
Oh my God. That's so good.
And the fact that Charles Melton might go from Riverdale to Oscar nominated actor.
Exactly.
Yeah, I have the belief that everyone in Riverdale is a great actor. They were just given
really
bad
are.
Material.
Except Cole Sprouse. Except Cole Sprouse. I'm not standing for that.
Yeah, do you have any fun? Oh, May December is about a woman. It's inspired by the Mary Kay Letourneur case. It's about a woman who's an actress played by Natalie Portman visiting another former actress who was caught in a scandal where she took advantage of a 13-year-old who was...
Was he 13 or was he 12?
He was 13. He was the friend of her son.
Oh my God, that's so horrible. Yeah. She was his teacher, no?
The real case, she was his teacher, but he was 12 in the real case.
Okay, I have to say really, 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 really quickly. They have an interview of the real thing.
Watch it, please.
Oh my God, it's so crazy that the interview is obviously trying to persecute her and say, hey, it doesn't matter. I don't have to know anything about his story. What you did is crazy. He was a child. And she turns to the child, or now a man, and goes, okay, but who was the boss during the relationship?
You know what's funny? Watching the interview, you can see it starting to click for him.
Yeah.
That he was a victim because he was 13 when it happened. Once you get to the age, once he got to her age, he realized how wrong it was.
I can't. Oh my
God. And you see it clicking at the interview.
Yeah.
if we had a website, we would, you know what, I'm going to post a link on the, on this show description, a bunch along with a bunch of other things that we have talked about. We have 30 seconds left.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening to Girls Meet World. I'm one of your hosts, Carla.
And I'm your other host, Kat.
We will see you next month.
Next month? Next year.
Next year.
Next year.
Oh my God, that's crazy. Close out the show, do you have something to say in the 20 seconds
gonna,
left?
I was just going to say, I assume Zoe and Adele will feel the exact same.
Cause I don't know. Yo, this is Beanie Man, and this is CKUT, original radio station for you and me. 90.3 FM, play music for you and them. Zaga now, now, now. Boom, 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 boom.
You're listening to CKUT. The following is a previously broadcast program. Stay tuned.
From Turtle Island to Palestine, occupation is a crime. Free, free Palestine! You're listening to Radio Free Palestine.
Welcome everyone, you are listening to Under the Olive Tree, the Palestine Solidarity Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario.
This is the Mondo Wise Podcast. I'm Dave Reed. Last month, Frank Barat spoke with Nora Ericott on our new YouTube show, Witnessing Palestine. As we recorded that program, Gaza had been under Israeli bombardment from the air, land, and sea for 70 days. At that time, 18,000 Palestinians in Gaza were known to have been killed by the Israeli military. Today, that number is over 28,000. More than 68,000 Palestinians in Gaza have been wounded. The Israeli military continues to invade Palestinian cities and villages in the West Bank. Violent attacks on Palestinians by Israeli settlers also continue. Nora joined Frank to discuss the collective trauma of Israel's genocidal assault on Gaza and where the global movement